It is Friday, November the 11th. This is VOA's International Edition. Many thanks for joining us. Coming up, many comparing Trump's election as the next U.S. president to the British Brexit vote. We'll look at why.
If I'm working in a factory and my factory closes down because of greater international trade, I'm out of a job and I'm not happy about it. And I may not like the appeal, well, it's good for the rest of us or it's good for the whole world. You know, I just care that I lost my job.
The plight of migrants from Africa, climate change conference going on in Morocco, a new movie starring Brad Pitt, plus the passing of a renowned Canadian singer-songwriter. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. In U.S. politics, President-elect Donald Trump went to the White House on Thursday to meet with President Obama. Speaking in the Oval Office, Mr. Obama stressed to Mr. Trump that his number one priority is to facilitate a smooth transition of power. After their meeting, Mr. Obama met up with reporters.
Well, I just had the opportunity to have an excellent conversation with President-elect Trump. It was wide-ranging. We talked about some of the organizational issues in setting up a White House. We talked about foreign policy. We talked about domestic policy.
Trump also said he looks forward to dealing with Mr. Obama in the future, calling it a great honor.
We discussed a lot of different situations, some wonderful and some difficulties. I very much look forward to dealing with the president in the future, including counsel. He explained some of the difficulties, some of the high-flying assets, and some of the really great things that have been achieved.
The White House said that long before Republican Trump's stunning upset Tuesday over Democrat Hillary Clinton became apparent, President Obama had directed officials last year to make a smooth transition between administrations a top priority of his last year in office. While in Washington, Trump also meeting with congressional leaders. Some analysts said that Donald Trump himself, as others have drawn comparison between his surprise election victory and the earlier decision by British voters to leave the European Union.
At the ballot box on November 8th, we are going to do something so special. It'll be called Brexit plus plus plus.
International Edition's Ira Melman discusses this comparison with Professor Jim Hartley. He is chair of the Department of Economics at Mount Holyoke College in Massachusetts.
I think what both of these elections show is that both Britain and America are deeply divided. On the one side, in both countries, there's a set of what we can think of as the intellectual elites. They went to elite colleges, they work in education and media and government, and they have this very common worldview across the countries. They tend to talk of themselves as being global citizens or part of a global community. And on the other side, in both countries, we have what we can think of as the other America or the other Britain. And these are people whose primary loyalties are to family or community or, most importantly, nation. And I think what we saw in both elections, and you can see it in the campaign slogans, is a big clash between these two groups of people. The Trump campaign slogan of Make America Great Again. And so one set of Americans hear that and they say, yes, we want America to be great again. And on the other side, you had people saying, well, when was America ever great? Or why should America be great? And in Britain, we saw the slogan for the Brexit was, we want our country back. And this is an assertion that people want to be British and not European. And on the other side, people sneering and saying, well, why wouldn't you want to be a part of Europe? And I think what we have is this sort of intellectual elite just fundamentally do not understand the other sets of people out there. They look down on them. They tend to want to call them racists or fascists. And what we saw in the election is this whole set of people are just tired of that. They're just tired of being called fascists and racists. And they want their nation, and they're voting for vaguely nationalist appeals in both countries. And it's just sort of a revolt of just people saying, I want to be an American. I don't want to be part of a global community. I want to be British. I don't want to be part of a global community.
Economically speaking, is this dangerous to the countries that are entering this realm?
I don't know if it's dangerous or not. It's just it's a different way of thinking about international economic relations. You saw it in both of them with things like international trade. International trade is a complicated issue. The economics of it are straightforward. As you do more and more international trade, it benefits both countries. It's unambiguous in the literature. But that's different than it benefits every single individual person. If I'm working in a factory and my factory closes down because of greater international trade, I'm out of a job and I'm not happy about it. And I may not like the appeal, well, it's good for the rest of us or it's good for the whole world. You know, I just care that I lost my job. And I think, again, we have a whole set of people running countries that just haven't spent enough time learning how to talk to and listen to people that really did lose their jobs as these things happen. So the danger is we sort of, you know, throw out the baby with the bathwater. You know, you sort of just, you lose all the ability of having international trade because we've been unable to articulate or talk about this with people who are affected adversely by it.
Well, you just referenced the fact that this is not limited to Great Britain and the United States. More and more is coming up, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think this sort of divide is going to be fairly common throughout the world as this sort of set of people, this intellectual elite, really are transnational. They're in all the different countries. They meet. They have this common worldview. And what we can imagine is sort of increasing amounts of people in country after country, you know, reasserting their nationhood. How it'll work out in elections going forward is hard to tell because we don't know the relative percentages in all these countries. Part of the problem we have in all the polling data is for the people that you know, want to assert the primacy of nation, you know, if you say, I want to be American or I want to be British, people are going to call you a fascist, you might be reluctant to articulate that you really do care about your nation. And so the polling data on this gets really rough when we can't rely on people honestly revealing what they vote.
Jim Hartley is chair of the Department of Economics at Mount Holyoke College. He was speaking with my colleague Ira Melman. Tens of thousands of people from New York to California filled the streets of large U.S. cities for a second day Thursday, demonstrating their dismay at Donald Trump's election. Many of the marchers were African American and Hispanic students. One tearful teenager in San Francisco told CNN television that immigrants in the U.S. are struggling to be successful, so Trump's campaign rhetoric attributing many social problems to them are just plain unfair. The demonstrators said the tone of Trump's campaign comments about immigration frightened them, and they accused him of racism, xenophobia, and sexism. Hillary Clinton's defeat this week has been seen by some as a blow to feminism. Some American moms are wondering how to explain it to their young daughters. What exactly happened to the attempt to make female history? VOA's Carolyn Pursuti is in New York with the story.
You could see the anticipation in their eyes on election night. A Clinton win, proof that women are created equal. A belief shared by moms who brought their daughters with them to vote.
It's life-changing. I mean, my girls will always know that a girl can be president, so nobody needs to tell them that they can't do anything.
We can be the president. Yeah!
Hillary Clinton herself gave young girls like them encouragement in her concession speech.
Never doubt that you are valuable and powerful and deserving of every chance and opportunity in the world to pursue and achieve your own dreams.
So what happened? The gender difference is striking. According to Pew Research, men preferred Trump by 12%. CNN shows white women preferred Trump by 10%. David Schultz, a political science professor, spoke to us on Skype.
There's, I think, still a large percentage of our population that won't vote for a woman for president for the United States.
In the early 1900s, Elizabeth Cady Stanton fought for a women's right to vote. Colleen Jenkins is her descendant.
So she would ask, what's the next step?
Some Trump supporters suggest a different female presidential nominee.
No, I want a woman for a president. Yay! But I want her to have integrity.
As Clinton steps out of the picture, other women say they're ready to step in.
You know, we need to become active again. Street politics, as I call it.
A century ago, women got the right to vote. Because of this election, they say they'll fight even harder to get the right to be in the White House. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, New York City.
VOA's full coverage of this week's presidential election is at our website, voanews.com. And later in the program, our social media expert, Giabby Lee, will be along with reaction to the Trump win. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA News is there.
VOA.
Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program, Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Also in the news, the Red Crescent is saying that 15 African migrant bodies have washed up on shore of Almaya on the Libyan coast.
Mohammed
Ahmed is a spokesman for the Libyan Red Crescent. He says they have recovered 5 bodies so far, hope to locate the remaining 10 in the next few days. Earlier this week, a Red Crescent representative in Tripoli reported that 2 boats, one carrying 150 migrants, the other carrying 240, had sunk off the shores of Libya, and more bodies were expected to be found in the coming days. Thousands of migrants seeking a better life in Europe cast off from Libya on rickety boats hoping to reach Italy, with many drowning on the way there. Some are forced by traffickers to board overcrowded vessels. And according to the International Organization for Migration, more than 3,600 people have died or gone missing while trying to cross the Mediterranean to Europe so far this year. Climate risk management is a key focus at the climate conference in Marrakesh, Morocco. Leaders exploring insurance plans offered in developing countries, to help smallholder farmers with severe and unexpected weather events occur. Olga Speckhardt is Global Insurance Solutions Manager at Syngenta Foundation for Sustainable Agriculture. That's a nonprofit agency that helps small farmers become more professional growers. Speckhardt is at the talks and speaks with VOA's Kim Lewis about how farmers can invest in risk reduction for food security.
Our foundation's mission is to modernize small-scale farming in low- and middle-income countries through sustainable intensification, diversification, and the activation of value chains. The foundation incubates scalable products and solutions, tests them, and catalyzes uptake and dissemination through commercial partnerships. And one of our focus areas is agriculture, insurance, and finance. And this is where ACA Africa comes in. ACA Africa was established from a Syngenta Foundation for Sustainable Agriculture, and up to date, we have been able to insure 800,000 farmers in 4 countries in East Africa, in Kenya, Rwanda, and Tanzania, and some projects in Uganda. And ACA Africa is a microinsurance product designer, linking stakeholders to agriculture insurance through localized solutions to reduce climate risks and transaction costs. So our products give farmers access to affordable insurance that mitigate their risks and also unlock access to agriculture credit. When I'm talking about affordable insurance, is that traditional insurance is too expensive for smallholder farmers based on indemnity cover. So we have developed an index on weather base. We also have the use of technology platform on board, which is the mobile payment, which also reduces the cost of transaction and the cost of people involved, paperwork, and so on. So our mission is actually to design the best tailor-made product for the smallholder farmer for the most affordable price.
How does this actually work? If you could give an example, for instance, if a farmer experiences a loss of his or her crops from a climate event or an environmental event, then what would they do?
The products we insured are weather index, area yield index, and satellite-based index insurance. The crops are maize, beans, wheat, sorghum, coffee, potatoes. That's the main one. So we have a range of different products. And I'm going to give you just an example of one retail product, very famous, which is the replanting guarantee The farmers can try out insurance by insuring as little as one bag of seed. Insuring 1 acre of maize against drought costs a farmer $37 cost or 10% of harvest value. So any payout is transferred to the farmer's mobile phone wallet at the end of the season. So in Kenya and Rwanda, where more than 96% of agricultural land is rain-fed and vulnerable to drought and erratic rain, mitigating weather-related risk for smallholder farmers is an important tool also for unlocking credit. The measure of humidity in the soil, this is what triggers the payout. So if there is a 15 millimeters of water on the soil, that is already triggering a payout. So the farmer gets an SMS back to his mobile phone and says, you are already receiving a payout from your insurance partner. It's a very simple product.
What has been the response from farmers so far?
We have some impact figures that we can really communicate publicly. So the impact so far, insured farmers invested 19% more and earned 16% more than the neighboring uninsured counterparts. And also, they increased access to finance. 97% of the farmers insured by acre received loans linked to the insurance. They really believe that this is a protection. This is not only about insurance. We do have capacity building on the ground. We talk to the farmers. We educate them. Why do they need this protection? Why do they need better farming practices? When is the best time for planting and so on? So they see all the value points that we really are trying to put on the table.
Olga Spechthardt is head of Global Insurance Solutions at Syngenta Foundation for Sustainable Agriculture. She was speaking with Kim Lewis, host of the VOA program Africa News Tonight. Researchers are saying that they have developed an HIV test that employs a common USB stick. The device, which makes a diagnosis using a drop of blood, was developed by researchers at Imperial College London and a company called DNA Electronics. According to an article about the device published in the journal Scientific Reports, the device can give accurate test results in under 30 minutes. That, researchers say, compares favorably with current tests, which take up to 3 days to yield a result. The USB stick device uses a mobile phone chip and requires only a small amount of blood, which is then placed on a specific spot on the device. Researchers say the device is 95% accurate. As I promised earlier, we are revisiting the Donald Trump win. Thursday was a big day for him. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is here with the latest. Hey, G.
Hi, Steve. Trump had an action-packed day meeting with President Barack Obama, House Speaker Paul Ryan, and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Gotcha, G. What's the online reaction to these meetings?
They're noting how cordial the meeting was, although it was such a neck-and-neck race. Bloomberg's national reporter Jennifer Jacobs tweeted, Mr. Obama said Trump's success is a country's success and that Trump called the president a very fine man. On the other hand, a comedian named Moshe Kasher shared this sarcastic tweet. It's important that we show President Trump and the Republicans the same respect and cooperation that they showed President Obama. Many Democrats and some Republicans feel the GOP did not cooperate with Mr. Obama fully during his presidency.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but some of the Trump supporters must be feeling he's not that well received by Democrats with all those protests going on.
Absolutely. The protest is going on nationwide, but let's talk about the one in New York, for example. Thousands of demonstrators took to the Trump Tower in Midtown with signs that read, "We reject the president-elect and love Trump's hate," which is a famous slogan, by the way, and they also use projectors to make letters appear on the Trump Tower. New York Times features writer Jacob Bernstein is a good person to follow to keep posted about the protests. His handle is @BernsteinJacob.
Any other news out there?
Yeah, there are dynamic reactions from Democrats to Senators Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders expressing that they will cooperate with Trump. While some people are saying they are disappointed, others are urging people not to blame the officials for working toward greater good. Steve, back to you.
Great. Many thanks to you, G. International Edition's G. Abby Lee. By the way, you can follow G on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I'm there as well at VOA Norman, and our program, International Edition, can be found on Twitter at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
Owner Lee Lang sits in the cockpit of his own airplane. I do this, he says, mainly to accomplish my dream. It took Mr. Lee $5 million to dismantle and reassemble his Boeing 737, which is now an 80-seat restaurant inside. Lily Airways sits on the ground outside of a shopping mall in Wuhan and Hubei province. A boarding ticket is your meal order, then an escort down the gate on a red carpet to your table in the sky. Not. No coach seating here. You'll enjoy first-class plush leather boots, dining with waiters dressed as flight attendants. Customer Zhou Ying just got married. She says it has a deep meaning. Maybe we'll come here next year for our anniversary. Perfect cabin pressure to enjoy Russian and French cuisine for about $60 a head. And soon enough, a flight simulator in the cockpit so you can play pilot on the ground, of course. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. So good to have you with us today. Well, there's a new film out there from Oscar-winning director Robert Zemeckis. It stars Oscar nominee Brad Pitt and Academy Award winner Marion Cotillard. It is called Allied, and it looks at the issues of love, loyalty, and war. International Edition's David Byrd tells us about this new film.
Said you were beautiful and good.
Being good at this kind of work is not very beautiful.
After the war, you have a place?
When the war is over, it won't matter where I am.
Brad Pitt plays Canadian Army officer Max Vatan, who goes undercover in Casablanca during World War II as part of a plan to assassinate a leading Nazi ambassador. That's where he encounters a French resistance fighter, Marianne Beauséjour, played by Oscar winner Marion Cotillard. They fall in love and later move to London and are married, but their life together is put in jeopardy when British officials say that Marianne could be a double agent.
There's no easy way to say what we're about to say.
We suspect your wife is a German spy.
It's insane.
If you are right,
all this will be forgotten.
But if she is,
you will execute her with your own hand, and if you do not comply, you'll be hanged.
Pitt says that the idea for the film came from writer Stephen Knight when the two worked together on World War Z.
The story itself, though, I learned about, I had a meeting with Stephen Knight, the writer,
yep,
years ago when we were shooting World War Z, and he began to tell me the story before he'd written it, and it was based on members of his family.
Cotillard says she was fascinated by playing such a strong, independent woman who is capable of both extreme violence and passionate love.
There's a truth and an authenticity about her. This movie is really a love story, and her love for this man is really authentic. It's a very strong character. She's a very strong woman, and it's always fun to play a very strong woman.
Director Robert Zemeckis says the movie touches on universal themes.
Well, it's kind of a universal theme. You know, life gets in the way of love a lot of times, and it's something that everybody can relate to.
This is Brad Pitt's fourth World War II-related film, following Inglourious Basterds in 2009, Beyond All Boundaries, and 2014's Fury. Director Robert Zemeckis says that both Pitt and Cotillard were great to work with.
Well, they turned out exactly as I'd hoped. They were, you know, both are fantastic actors, and I couldn't be more pleased, and I had a great time working with both of them. They're just wonderful.
The film was shot in 14 locations, including the Canary Islands, France, and around London. Allied is rated R for violence, sexuality, drug use, and profanity. The film opens in the United States November 23rd. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And many thanks to you, Dave. Leonard Cohen, that gravelly-voiced Canadian singer-songwriter of Hallelujah, Suzanne, and Bird on a Wire, has died. He was 82. No further details of his death were given. Cohen, also renowned as a poet, a novelist, an aspiring Zen monk, blended folk music and a bit of a darker edge that won him fans around the world and many among his fellow musicians like Bob Dylan and R.E.M. Here's Leonard Cohen singing a song, Hallelujah.
I've heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Play some more of that here in just a moment. I just wanted to say thanks to everybody for listening to us today here on The Voice of America and on International Edition. You know, you can always find us at voanews.com. And we hope you'll stay tuned for the latest world news. It's coming up next. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, John Ellison, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Friday.
And the moonlight overthrew you. She tied you to a kitchen chair. And she broke your throne and she cut your hair. And from your lips she drew the hallelujah. 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 God above, as for me, all I ever learned from love is how to shoot at someone who outdrew you. But it's not a cry that you hear tonight. It's not some pilgrim who claims to have seen the light. No, it's a cold and it's a very
next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
From July through September, the United States, through the USAID Agro Horizon Project, sponsored a series of business growth events to connect Kyrgyzstani agricultural producers with local and international buyers. Food processors from Botken, Jalalabad, Naran, and Osh oblasts met with potential buyers during three large forums in Almaty, Bishkek, and Osh, and through over 100 smaller meetings. These forums and meetings resulted in contracts and agreements that created new economic opportunities for the Kyrgyz Republic worth $5.4 million. The events attracted 16 suppliers and 27 buyers from the Kyrgyz Republic, Kazakhstan, Mongolia, and other neighboring countries. The parties signed contracts and memoranda of understanding to provide both processed and fresh products, including vegetables, fruits, juice, tomato paste, pickles and sauces, vegetable salads, puree jam, meat and dairy products. The USAID Agro Horizon Project was a great boost to our company's growth. We were able to sign contracts that we previously had not thought to be possible, and now we're even preparing our product for export, said Ashkar Okenov, director of Concept Master LLC, a producer of tomato paste based in Jalalabad Oblast. These business growth events are part of USAID's broader efforts to grow smallholder farmers' and agricultural producers' incomes by increasing their productivity, improving product quality, and expanding markets for agricultural goods. Thanks to U.S. support, USAID Agro Horizon participants have doubled or even tripled yields and have improved their marketing and pricing practices. The U.S. is proud to work with its partner Kyrgyzstan to strengthen its agricultural sector, grow its economy, and improve the lives of the people of Kyrgyzstan and the South and Central Asia regions.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.